97.9 The Hill, WCHL, and UNC School of Media and Journalism present Sports Focus with Charlie Tuggle. Sports Focus, dedicated to in-depth examination of issues of overriding importance in the sports world. Each week, we'll discuss problems and look for solutions in professional, collegiate, and amateur sports. From Carroll Hall on the Carolina campus, here's your host, UNC Journalism Professor Charlie Tuggle.
Welcome to Sports Focus. Our topic today, the college admissions cheating scandal. Our guest, Brendan Marks, sports writer at the Charlotte Observer and a UNC grad. So, Brendan, on Wednesday of this week, Michael Center, former men's tennis coach at Texas, pleaded guilty in this case. A couple of other coaches have already pleaded guilty. Yale soccer coach, Stanford sailing coach, fourth soccer coach at Southern Cal is going to enter a guilty plea. Where in the world did this come from? I mean, this whole thing was so out of the blue that people would pay college coaches to pretend that their kids were college level athletes.
Yeah, absolutely, Dr. T. It's sort of, I think, just another step in what we're seeing as far as the corruption of the NCAA amateur model and the corruption of college athletics overall. Is you're seeing coaches that at certain times have this unilateral power almost to vet athletes who could potentially come to their school, to vet recruits. And sometimes that power gets to the point where it's not being checked by anybody. You know, they are the ultimate determinant. And so as a result, there are situations like this that can arise. I mean, I know for me, at least, it's sort of hard to believe that this is something that was actually happening and happening at the level and on the span, as wide span as it was. But at the same time, when you have coaches in college athletics who are not being checked, who are not being covered as diligently in the media, who have that sort of control of institutional leverage, there's always going to be an opportunity for corruption. And obviously, we've seen that manifest.
Yeah, and I believe that's the key to it. It's these lower level sports, the non-revenue sports, where you could hide a kid. You're not going to be able to hide a kid on the men's basketball team or probably even the football team, but because those get a lot of scrutiny. But some of these lower level non-revenue sports, I could see where you could hide a kid and that kid be brought on with a tennis scholarship, as was the case in Texas, and then immediately quits the team when he gets to school. So we often hear about corruption and problems in the revenue sports, but this is the other side of that coin.
Exactly, and I think that's the biggest key there, is differentiating between the revenue sports and the Olympic sports, because as is the case at Carolina, as is the case at every Division I major school in the country, you're going to have athletes who come into a program, they leave a program for one reason or another. Maybe it's a health problem. Maybe it's a passion thing. Maybe it's just a time management thing. There are any number of reasons why athletes opt not to be a part of these teams. So whenever you see someone do that, it's not something that immediately catches your eye. Exactly as you were saying, but it's much easier to hide some of those decisions and some of those people leaving when it's not in a sport that's being diligently covered and combed over by the media. If any player, even a walk-on, were to be excused from UNC's basketball team, for example, the media would know about it instantly. Not only would they know about it, but they would dig and they would try and find out, you know, the true reason behind it. And if it turned out to be something innocuous, fine. But if it turned out to be something more, they would be all over that. But in the lower revenue sports, the Olympic sports, you don't have that kind of media oversight. And of course, these coaches aren't going to be doing it because they're the ones benefiting from it. So it honestly is, if you were one of the people who was perpetrating the scandal, it makes sense to go after the Olympic sports rather than the revenue ones. It's much easier to hide, like you said. I don't really see a situation where it could have worked if they hadn't done it the way that they had.
All right. So what I don't get is, you talked about oversight. Where was the athletics director? Where were the compliance people whose job it is to make sure that this kind of stuff doesn't happen?
Exactly. So the best example that I think I can give you of that is actually not one of the examples you mentioned, but it's the example that to me in this whole thing has been the most shocking. And that's the case of the University of Southern California's former water polo coach. I think his name is pronounced Jovan Bavich, and I could be mispronouncing that. But basically, this guy was a perpetual national championship winning and contending coach. USC consistently had some of the best teams in the country. They are bringing in the top level recruits from California and all over the rest of the United States. And because this guy had so much clout and had such a reputation that preceded him, any time that he found a recruit, essentially, the way it has been explained to me and the way I understand it from having spoken to people and reading stories about this whole scandal, is that he would go to the athletic department and say, hey, here are the people I want to bring in. Can you make sure that they're, you know, academically cool? And the athletic department would say, yep, they're good academically. We trust you as far as the recruitment, because obviously this guy had such a reputation. And I think they won almost double-digit national championships. It would be the equivalent of someone like Anson Dorrance at North Carolina, where you are obviously going to trust his judgment and put that at a premium. I'm not at all suggesting that Anson is affiliated with this in any way, but I mean that just to sort of convey the status of these coaches who were able to perpetrate some of this. So this water polo coach, Jovan Bavich, for example, he's got such clout when he goes to the athletic department that they're not going to be questioning his decisions as far as recruiting. And as long as the players that he wants to bring in, quote unquote, players, clear academically, then they're going to leave the rest of it to his judgment. They don't necessarily need to see the tape on the guy, because what are they going to say to this guy? I don't think you should bring him in. They're not the national championship winning coaches. So I think when you get people who have that much power within their own organizations, their own institutions, it can be really hard to really find where some of those cracks are coming from, especially since we've never seen anything like this before. There's no precedent, although I'm sure that this is going to guarantee that there's a lot more institutional oversight in the future for Olympic sports across the board at D1 colleges.
Sports Focus, we'll be right back.
You're listening to Sports Focus with Charlie Tuggle. And now, back to the show.
Welcome back to Sports Focus. We're talking with Charlotte Observer sports writer Brendan Marks, a UNC grad, about this college admissions cheating scandal. And Brendan, one more note about the Texas tennis coach, former journalism major. I read that and it's like, oh, no. You know, I don't know why I should think that those of us associated with journalism should be held to a higher standard, but I do feel that. And yeah. And it's like not another mark against somebody in journalism or associated with journalism.
Exactly. And it is, you know, for someone who's in journalism, like both of us are, it is hard to hear some of those things. It's obviously not what you would want to say, but at the same time, if you can kind of put yourself in those shoes, someone who has been on the inside knows how the media works, knows what the media is looking for, is also going to know where the holes are and know the sorts of things that don't necessarily attract media attention. And so it can be a benefit for someone who does have that prior experience where they can say, okay, when I did this, this is the things that we looked at. These are the things we ignored. So if we're ignoring those things in the past, they're probably still being ignored now. And that's sort of where you can find some of these loopholes that coaches like the Texas tennis coach were able to exploit. So you would rather, obviously, that it not be someone who's affiliated, but I can also understand why that background as a journalist would at least make you more keen to where the holes in the system are so you could exploit them.
All right. So prosecutors in this case, five people have already pleaded guilty, including these several coaches we mentioned. 16 others have agreed to plead guilty. Felicity Huffman, the actress, is among them. Lori Loughman, another actress, basically her defense is, we didn't know.
Yeah.
Who buys that?
Yeah, I don't think there's any way that these people are getting out of this. I mean, I think it's also one of the easiest things to prove. I mean, if there is, as there seems to be very clearly a trail for most of the people who are taking pleas or pleading guilty, there's usually a lot of breadcrumbs tracing back to them. And even if there aren't, the ultimate test is, are these students up to the task? And obviously they're not. They're if you were to stack them up in a field with anybody else on their team, they're going to sorely stand out. And you're going to say, you're going to very obviously be able to see that this person is not here on the merits of their athletic achievements. And so I think the combination of those two things is just, it's so incriminating that there's no way that anyone could try and you know, jostle their way out of that situation. It's just sort of, it is what it is. You got caught, you're red-handed. This whole thing is just such a crazy idea. And I'm sure that none of these people had any idea that they were being followed or tracked as closely as they were. But the fact that this is as widespread as it is, I don't know about you, but that's the part that really gets me. And it doesn't necessarily seem like there's a correlation between certain places. You know, what is the correlation between a USC water polo coach, a Texas tennis coach, a Yale coach? I mean, there's obviously going to be connections in terms of the people who are helping to facilitate these athletes, quote unquote athletes, getting in. But at the same time, it's crazy to me just how widespread this is. It seems like it's hitting pockets all over the country.
Yeah, the prosecutors have said more arrests could be coming soon. So that we have 50 people already on the hook. Looks like there could be quite a few more. And Brenda, one thing that I really wonder about is, what about the system leads people to think that this is even a possibility? Why would you even think, what would lead you to think that, oh, I can't get Johnny into USC, but what if I got him, you know, we got him in on a rowing scholarship? Who even thinks of this kind of stuff?
Yeah, I think, you know, I don't actually look at it from that perspective necessarily so much as I look at it from the coach's perspective. And that's the thing that I'm trying to understand the most. It's not from the parents, because I can understand a parent wanting their child to be, you know, have the best opportunity to go to the best school, to be in the best location, et cetera, the best resources. I can completely understand that, you know, a parent looking out for their child, that the creativity of coming up with this scandal, maybe not necessarily so, but I can understand wanting your best for your kid. The part that I think is a little more interesting to look at in the context of the NCAA and the way that our amateur athletic model works is coming from the coach's point of view and saying, why would a coach want to do this? Why would a coach, for especially someone at a place like Texas, where you're being well compensated? I mean, if you're a college athletics coach, you're not lack, especially at one of these major, major reputable D1 institutions. It's not like you're living and dying by paycheck to paycheck. It's not like you're on the pennies for the dollar. I mean, especially if you're someone like, again, I go back to the USC water coach, Jovan. It's not like this is not someone who hasn't already achieved a lot. So to me, I look at it almost as a sort of greed. It's how much can I push the envelope? It's how much can I test the system? How much policing is there actually? Or am I able to get away with some of this stuff? And I think that there's definitely an aura of invincibility that surrounds all of college athletics. And that's why some of these people who are, you know, being taken in for this scandal or for the federal basketball corruption scandal, whatever it is, there's this sense that because you're involved in college athletics, you're untouchable. And I think what we're seeing now is that's clearly not the case. And how many more examples of this is it going to take before coaches, before athletes, before everyone at universities will stop trying to push the envelope as much as they can to the point of going over the cliff? That, I think, is the question of how many more episodes like this is it going to take? And anybody who tells you they have a clear answer to that is lying. But that is the thing I think that's worth monitoring the most as this scandal progresses and as plea deals and guilty pleas continue.
Sports Focus will be right back.
You're listening to Sports Focus with Charlie Tuggle. And now back to the show.
Welcome back to Sports Focus. We're talking about the college admissions cheating scandal, and we're talking with Charlotte Observer sports writer Brendan Marks. So, Brendan, you were talking about why would coaches do this, because they're compensated well personally. Some of the coaches have said, I didn't do it for myself. I did it for my program. So what's wrong with the overall system that coaches of these Olympic sports have to scrimp and and put on bake sales and, you know, man the concession stands at the men's basketball game or take bribes to make their programs successful.
Yeah, I mean, I think it just shows the disparity between the Olympic sports and the revenue sports. I mean, that's as apparent anywhere as it is at North Carolina. I mean, North Carolina has a top-notch revenue sport in men's basketball that is going to consistently be able to take care of itself and rein a profit. The athletes aren't going to see any dollar out of that other than their scholarships, but they're not going to see anything external. Whereas you also have programs in Olympic sports, women's soccer, field hockey, lacrosse, tennis, golf. I mean, there are so many Olympic sports in North Carolina that are in the same stratosphere within their sports, where they are consistently challenging for national championships, for Final Fours. They're consistently winning ACC titles. They have the same clout within their respective sports, but in the grand scheme of the NCAA model, it's not rewarded in nearly the same way. And you can understand that because it's, you know, obviously people are not going to spend nearly as much money to watch a UNC versus Duke golf match as they are UNC and Duke men's basketball match. That I don't have to explain to anyone. The more striking thing is just that this idea that there's not enough money to go around because the revenue sports are more than overproducing for their amount. And, you know, it's just sort of all of it just stinks. You know, when you think about the discrepancy between the two, when you think about how much money is being pulled in by these schools and how little the athletes are actually seeing returned back to them. I mean, the examples you gave of, you know, women's soccer players, for example, or field hockey players or tennis players, whatever, having to work concession stands, that's ludicrous. If you asked a men's basketball or football player to do that, it would be laughable. But it should be laughable for all of them. They're all athletes. They're all at the same level within their respective sports. You shouldn't be penalized for excelling or being talented at one thing compared to another. So at that point, you have to look back to the model, and it just doesn't place the same value on different athletes. And I'm not saying that it shouldn't be that way, but I am saying that the revenue sports are producing more than enough money to compensate for the lack of revenue from Olympic sports. It's just, how do you distribute that all? And of course, that's the biggest ongoing issue with the NCAA that we have today.
All right. So when this story first came out, you know, Yale, you can see someone going, well, my kid's not good enough to get into Yale, or even Southern Cal, 12% acceptance rate, but Texas, 40% acceptance rate. Your kid isn't good enough, isn't in the top 40%. So my initial reaction to this was, oh, thank God UNC isn't implicated in this. And then it's like, but why not? You know, I'm almost offended that UNC is not implicated because it's really hard to get into this school.
It is. I will say that as far as, like you, I was very glad that UNC was not implicated or involved in this. And I think that at the end of the day is the more important thing. But I think also part of the reason for that, specifically in North Carolina, is just the general aura, I would say, that surrounds the athletics department here just because of all the recent scandals that they've survived and have come out, you know, fortunately, as well as I think a lot of people could have imagined. And that's as far as any academic athletic scandals, as far as any illegal benefits for athlete scandals. I just think there's such a cautious culture at North Carolina right now. And obviously what we're seeing currently with the women's basketball team and Sylvia Hatchell, there are so many things going on at this university and have been for the last 5 to 10 years that I would like to say that these coaches are smart enough to know where you can and can't push that envelope. In North Carolina, with all the stigmas that are attached to it as far as these scandals that it has survived in recent years, this is not the place where you'd want to try something like this. It's just too risky. The media is alert to these sorts of things, even in the Olympic sports. But yeah, like you said, I had a similar reaction to you when I saw some of these schools that were involved. It was, wow. I mean, really, that was worth it for you to try and cheat this badly for a place like this? And obviously, what everyone wants is different. Some people want different experiences in college and want different things for their kids. But it's definitely interesting which schools this actually popped up at. I totally agree with you.
And there are others to come, according to the prosecutors. And that does it for this edition of Sports Focus. Thanks to our guest, Brendan Marks, sports writer at the Charlotte Observer. and a proud UNC alum. Thanks also to engineer Gary Kirk, and as always, thanks to you for listening. Cheers.
Thanks to Richard Southall, Mark Nagel, and Deborah Southall at the College Sport Research Institute at the University of South Carolina for their research and guidance, and for access to CSRI's international network of sources. Sports Focus is a service of UNC School of Media and Journalism.